are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Just goes to verify my thoughts that baseball season should never end.
I think that is a very, very good point.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
That's the insane part to me. DeGrom has a huge injury history. Like, if anybody's going to break down between the two, it's the guy that spent time on the DL in 2017.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm not usually on the fence. It's not a place I live. I'm certainly not on the fence about this. This is lavish ridiculousness. And
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Chuck and Darius. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing just fine, but I would say that all this calamity that happened at the end of the baseball season just goes to verify my thoughts that baseball season should never end.
I think that is a very, very good point.
Yeah. I mean, poor Justin was, for you listeners out there who do not know, poor Justin was evacuated from his home twice for the wildfires in San Francisco. I had some peril with close friends that I had to take care of, including that involved a funeral, unfortunately. And somehow or another, Darius in England ended up in a hurricane, nearly. So we don't know.
Yeah, Darius, you're doing okay out in good old England, right?
Yeah, we're fine. You know, we kind of do everything small anyway, so it wasn't really a hurricane like you guys had when I was over there a couple of months ago. It was much lower key. So yeah, some pretty significant damage for us, and we certainly don't normally get hurricanes, but relatively speaking, we got off lightly.
And as Chuck mentioned, I have been I was affected by the fires in Northern California. Had to evacuate my home twice, and that's why we went dark for a little while. I'm sure people thought, oh, well, season's over, they're gone, we'll talk to them again in, you know, the beginning of the next year. And that's not the case. We are still planning on recording at least one episode a week throughout the rest of the year before we really jump into our big coverage of the 2018 season, which will start beginning of January. But unfortunately, life happens, and like Chuck mentioned, I had to evacuate my home twice because two fires got within a mile of my home. So I'm safe and sound. My home is still standing, but life was a little bit hectic there for a little while, so we were unable to record over the course of the last couple weeks. But we are back in the full swing of things, and we're going to talk about some players today that have been eliminated from the playoffs. I kind of tried to come up with lists or a list of some interesting guys that either had big postseasons or maybe very, very short postseasons, but people we should talk about in terms of their 2018 value and see if maybe we're not taking them in proper spots because we just finished some mock drafting at Friends of Fantasy Benefits and within the entire industry as well. And then also some guys had big postseasons, and maybe that's going to affect their 2018 stock as well. So but before we jump into that, I want to ask you guys real quick, Chuck, who's going to win the World Series and why?
Well, I think the Dodgers are going to win the World Series. At this point, I do think that they're the most complete team. I think they have a huge bullpen advantage. But I think if you follow me on Twitter, you people out there know that I'm disgusted by the Dodgers. You know, the $20+ million they're paying Carl Crawford, $17 million that they're paying Scott Kazmir. They just threw a bunch of mud up against the wall and decided what would stick. And that's, I think it's fiscally irresponsible and ridiculous. And so I will be rooting heavily against them. But unfortunately, I do think that they're going to win, and they do have some very likable players on their team. So it's not all bad. But Houston also sent us our David Stearns, our general manager here in Milwaukee. So I would love the confirmation that this kind of process can end up in a World Series championship. But I just would ask people out there to take a look at the rosters and realize how little dead money is on the Astros and how ridiculous the Dodgers had to spend to get here.
Darius, who do you think is going to win and why?
I think the Dodgers are going to win, sadly. I want the Astros to win as a Giants fan. I'm not the kind of Giants fan who spends all my time hating the Dodgers, but I would still rather they didn't win the World Series. I kind of wanted Kershaw to do what he did last night, just so that people stop talking about him not being able to do it in the playoffs. So that's kind of one of my wishes out of the way. But I think they've got the slightly better team, I think, with the pitching staff looking like it does, especially with the way that Brandon Morrow and Kenta Maeda are pitching the bullpen as well. I don't see any big weaknesses there. And yeah, I think they've just had a pretty easy time of it this whole postseason, and they seem to have put that cold streak behind them pretty thoroughly. So I think the Dodgers are going to win it as much as I would like the Astros to.
All right. I am picking the Astros to win the World Series. One, because I hate the Dodgers. Two, I just feel like they have the better offense in general. And I know that the Dodgers pitching, especially in their bullpen, seems superior to the Astros. But I'm going to go with a team with a better offense and better lineup top to bottom. I think that there is a chance that the Astros take this to seven games, but I bet on the Astros, and I'm gonna say it goes six, and so yeah, it may be a little bit of homerism talking, because like Darius mentioned, there are Giants fans that are extreme Dodger haters, and I am one of them, so it may be a little homerism, but I'm taking the Astros to win it in six. All right, though Chuck did mention the amount of money that the Dodgers have not playing in this World Series that they're still paying out. I am calculating up some of that real quick, and I can roughly say between guys who just didn't make the World Series roster and guys that are no longer even within their organization that they're still paying out, they're paying out more money than probably about half of Major League Baseball's contracts or team's contracts for their entire team. So $22 million for Adrian Gonzalez, $21 million for Carl Crawford this year, $7.5 million for Alexander Guerrero to play in Korea. Hector Oliveira is getting $4.6 million this year. Matt Kemp is making $2.7 million from the Dodgers.
It's also, I think it's worth mentioning that when they got the GM from Tampa Bay, or the influx of Tampa Bay influence, people thought there was going to be some form of fiscal responsibility, and they're really, it hasn't come anywhere close to that. And I find it kind of disgusting, and it goes against, I always want to think that these teams from, you know, these smaller market teams, if these GMs and, you know, these upper management people got the opportunity, that they could use their money more wisely. And instead we see, you know, the Brandon McCarthy kind of stuff going on. And it kind of makes me lose my faith in humanity. So I'm not on the fence about this. I'm not usually on the fence. It's not a place I live. But I'm certainly not on the fence about this. This is lavish ridiculousness, and it's not going to have lasting. They're not going to have a lasting run here doing it this way, is what my hope is.
Yeah, well, luckily for them, they have a bunch of players on very, very cheap contracts and under team control for a while to allow them to throw shit against the wall and have it not stick. So, but let's jump in and talk about some players that are no longer in the postseason, but have interesting narratives to go along with them, or they had big postseasons. Or they went either way too high or way too low in the mock drafts that I did. And so I want to talk about their 2018 value. Let's start with Greg Bird. I don't think anybody had a bigger postseason is concerned in terms of what it will do to their 2018 value, as Greg Bird did. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Greg Bird's postseason kind of explosion? And then where would you expect him, or where should he go in 2018?
Yeah, I think it's kind of unfortunate in a way, because although he did return and have kind of a nice August, September there and showed some good power again and had some nice plate discipline, I think the postseason has the risk to make him a little bit overpriced next year. It's obviously some high profile home runs he's hit, and I think the power is very definitely going to play in that park, and he's obviously got some pretty nice hitters in that lineup around him in Judge and Sanchez. So I kind of like where he's at, and he seems to be healthy, which is another big concern that I had, and there certainly seems to be no sign of that in the playoffs. As for where he should go, I kind of see him, I'd like to get him as maybe a corner infield guy, sort of maybe middle to late rounds would be fine by me. I don't know how this is going to play out and how many fantasy players are paying attention to what he did in the playoffs. I suspect if people were, then there might be people buying in kind of the way that they did sort of after his 2015 debut, and then he might get a little bit too rich for my liking, because I still think there could be some strikeout issues there. But what I saw is encouraging, and I won't criticize people if they want to pay up a little bit, because I think there's potential for some pretty nice fantasy numbers here.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Greg Bird?
You know, he only had 147 at bats this year. He did have 3 home runs and 28 at-bats versus left-handed pitching. He's got this very interesting career reverse platoon split so far. You know, he only hit 168 last year against right-handed pitching. But between 2014 and 2016, that was also something that he did. He managed to hit better against lefties, which is a bit encouraging, I guess, considering his home digs and the way Yankee Stadium itself plays. But he's only got 451 career at-bats. And to be honest with you, you know, as an afterthought, I looked up his age, because to me, his age doesn't matter very much. He's just been kind of brittle already as a player. And so, and with that body type, he's not somebody that you can't say, ooh, he's 24. Can you imagine how good he's going to be when he's 33? I mean, we don't even really know if he's going to make it that long, you know, with him being brittle already and not having a body type that is, you know, programmed to age very well to begin with. So I just don't think we know very much about Greg Bird. I think people who draft Greg Bird early are people who really enjoy playing the lottery, because I don't think in the way these at-bats have been spread out, 451 career at-bats would be one thing if it was in the last 2 years, but it's not. The way it's been spread out, I mean, I don't think Major League Pitching has really had a chance to build a book against him. And so to me, he's somebody that you're playing the lottery with. It's not that he doesn't have skill. He's obviously got power. He's in the right spot. But between the health and how little we know about him as an actual major league player, I think it's complete lottery ticket.
I'm with you, but I think that there is going to be a number of people within the industry itself and then in drafts that really just bid him up. We saw this happen coming into this season when he went on a kind of an explosion in spring training, and people really started buying in and really paying top dollar for him. And then he barely, you know, saw time this year. I mean, he only played in 48 games, had 170 plate appearances. During the course of his postseason escapades this year, he had 41 at-bats, hit three home runs, which is why people are excited about him. But people aren't even paying attention to the fact that he hit 244 over that time. So, I mean, this isn't a guy necessarily. He reminds me not. I mean, the swing isn't the same, but he reminds me a little bit of Brandon Belt in terms of a left-handed hitter that I think can either hit for average or hit for power. But I'm not I'm not sold yet that he can do both at the same time.
How about a health track record comparison of Nick Johnson? Since he was also a Yankee first baseman with obvious talent. But, I mean, that talent's got to be on the field for you to use it, you know.
I see where you're going with it. And the only thing I will say is that, I mean, for the most part, until the injury in 2000, you know, at the end of what 2015, I think it was, he was healthy throughout the minor leagues. I mean, he put together 573 plate appearances at single A in 2013 between two levels. He put together 441 plate appearances in 2014. In 2015, between four levels, I believe, put together another 500 plate appearances. So, I mean, since the injury at the end of 2015 or beginning 2016, I can't remember exactly where it was, where he missed all of the season of 2016, he's had a hard time staying on the field. Now, that could be the beginning of something. You know, nothing predicts future injury like past injury, and so you don't have an injury history until you do. But I would caution against calling him injury prone this early.
That's fair. It's fair, but I mean, you're painting a side of it that I think needs to be painted, and I'm painting the other side of it that he hasn't faced major league pitching for more than 2 months.
I agree with you. There is no way that Greg Bird will end up on any of my teams next year. It just will not happen.
Yeah, it's just an odd dichotomy, which makes him, I think, is where the lottery ticket comes in. But remember, when I say lottery ticket, I guess it's really not accurate, because I think there's a much better chance that you get positive returns than you do when you're buying a lottery ticket. It's just the level of the positive return could be anything from winning a buck to winning $100 to hitting the lottery. And I think that's what I mean by that comparison about the lottery ticket. I'm not going to blame somebody for taking that kind of a gamble. If early rounds go bad for someone, I can see them needing this kind of potential upside.
All right, I'm going to give you guys some would you rathers real quick on Greg Bird, because where he went in the mock drafts is about where I would put him. But I mean, by the time the playoffs started, all the drafts were past like the pick 150, pick 200, and so his price hadn't inflated from what he was doing in the postseason. So his average draft position is at pick 218.25, so the 218th pick, which for me is exactly where I would probably put him in my ranks. So I'm going to give you some names of people that went above that or before that, because I think his price will have raised, and see if you guys would rather have Greg Bird or someone like, let's do Mitch Haniger.
I think I might rather take the shot on Bird there, depending on what I need. I think Haniger's a pretty different kind of player, but I kind of like Bird's potential upside more.
I think I would rather have Bird, because it appears that Bird's path to playing time is very clear, and there could still be some blurriness with Haniger.
I'm going to agree with you guys there. Haniger has a pretty extensive injury history of his own, so. What about Bird or Nomar Mazara?
Yeah, I still think that Mazara has pretty big breakout potential. I kind of feel like I'll be ranking them in a very similar range next year. So I think the helium on Bird might push me towards Mazara, but only because he's might end up being more of a value, although he went before him in the mocks. But I would take Mazara there, I think, if they were the same price.
I think 95 times out of 100, that'll be team need by position at that point. But I do agree that they're very similar in value kind of players, because Mazara is so young and has shown so many flashes that I think in a vacuum, I would still take Bird just because of playing in Yankee Stadium. But I would have no problem with either one.
Yeah, I'm taking Mazara pretty easily. 22 years old, he's already had two seasons where he's hit 20 home runs at the major league level. I just think he's going to get better and better. So I'm taking Mazara there. Last one, Greg Bird or Eddie Rosario?
That's definitely Bird for me, I think. Maybe I need to look into Rosario more, but I don't think I buy him to that extent, and I'd rather just have the potential and the Yankee Stadium home run upside.
Well, the beauty of Eddie Rosario is that when he's bad, he hasn't been all that bad. And there definitely is, I think there's more downside to Bird, but significantly more upside. I guess I would still make a slight nod towards Bird there. But again, I think that's close enough. I mean, Rosario was so impressive in the second half. And I've always wondered why he's been so underrated as a player, as a generality. And so, you know, I would have no problem with someone taking Rosario ahead of Bird, but I would lean Bird.
Yeah, I think I would lean Bird, too. I'm going to do one more because I just did a bunch of outfielders, and I want to get a first baseman that went around the same spot as him. Hanley Ramirez or Greg Bird?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I still think Hanley has it in him if he's healthy. So I guess I would still take him. But yeah, I wouldn't feel all that good about it.
I don't draft players like Hanley Ramirez by and large as a generality. Not because he hasn't been a good player, but we all know he could have been a great player and he just didn't care enough. And I just think all the health concerns that you could conceivably come up with about Bird, you certainly have about Hanley Ramirez. And then you add the attitude. Like, I'd rather lose with a good attitude than, you know, lose with a terrible attitude. And I feel like in the middle of the season next year, I could just be punching myself in the face daily for drafting Hanley Ramirez. So I can't do it. I would much rather have Bird.
I've only seen you lose or win with a good or with a poor attitude. I've never seen this good attitude Chuck you speak of.
This good attitude Chuck is, I mean, think about what I've been through in the three sport league. I'm still plugging away. I haven't
where's this good attitude you're talking about?
Well, I try to stay positive through my three sport team has been in this wildfire that you're speaking of, like right in the middle. I didn't have time to evacuate. And so, but you know, you still plug away and you do the best you can. Like I said, I feel like Greg Bird is making an attempt, you know, it's certainly trying to do everything the right way. And I just don't know what you're getting from Hanley Ramirez.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm probably taking Greg Bird there too. All right, let's move on. Talk about Jose Berríos. Had a very short-lived run in the playoffs because of the Yankees and Greg Bird. He is a polarizing player for next year. A lot of people believe he will take a huge step next year. Chuck, are you one of them?
I am not. I feel like, as much as I like the Twins, they're my American League team, and as much as I like their manager, who is my favorite Brewer of all time, I do feel like the Twins massively overachieved, and some of his value came from the 14 wins that the Twins got, and the Twins helped him get, and I don't think those are going to be there or even close next year. And I also feel like he had a really strong couple of start to the season last year, but his best ERA after June was 3.89. His ERA was over 5 on the road. I think he's in that middle group of pitchers, but I think his youth and some of his hot streaks are going to push him to the front of the middle group of pitchers. And I don't see much difference between him and a bunch of guys in the middle of the pack. I just don't. So I think he's going to go before I'm willing to take him.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Jose Berríos?
I'm a lot more optimistic, I think. He's still got a lot to learn, and the components are there. I feel like he's definitely shown flashes. We've all seen ridiculous gifs of his stuff. I think the fastball is good. I think the changeup and the curve can be great when he's commanding them well, and that comes and goes for him, I think, even within starts. So I certainly can see why people wouldn't want to take him. And he's the kind of guy who's got the prospect pedigree and the helium that might make him a little bit too rich for me in drafts. But I think there's potential for a big step forward here. And I think the year he does figure it out, he's the kind of guy who could really win you a league, because I think he could jump up from that 3-4 starter to at least a high end number 2. So, yeah, I'll certainly be keeping an eye on his price and and monitoring that. There's definitely some significant downside here. And again, this is maybe a staff construction thing. I might want to have somebody, a player or two that I could be fairly confident in counting on the top of my rotation if I was going to pay the price for Berrios. But I think there's a decent amount of upside built in here. And if he reaches it next year, then yeah, I think he could definitely help you win some leagues.
Yeah, decent home park, a team that has a pretty good offense behind it. They definitely need to find some more pitching to go along with Berrios, but I think those 14 wins could be repeated if the offense continues to make gains like we saw this year. You don't never want to bet on wins, but I mean, he's got elite stuff, and he's learning how to pitch at the major league level. I think he's doing a very good job of it. I'm not going to say he's going to take a huge step forward, but I don't anticipate him taking a step back. I would think that gains would be at worst incremental. And so if he can build upon a 3.89 ERA, you know, almost a strikeout at inning, I'm going to be pretty happy with where I get him next year if I'm getting him as a low end pitcher too. For me, you know, especially if I'm pairing him with an ace, I think he's like the perfect guy to go ahead and pair with like a Max Scherzer if I went early on a pitcher. Let's move on. Let's talk about Trevor Story, another guy whose postseason ended very, very quickly. They lost in the wild card game. He had a home run, I believe, in that game. But he also was one of the higher players. I believe he was going off in the top 25 this year, coming into the 2017 season. Now being drafted in, at least in my mock draft, outside the top 150. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Trevor Story?
Yeah, he actually was one of the guys who made my all-bust team a few weeks ago. So I do have his ADP somewhere here. It was pretty high. It was 35.5 on average across all the platforms. So you were paying a third-round pick for Story in the preseason, and he probably crushed a lot of teams. I think the strikeout risk is always going to be there, and if you're going to get that, then you want him to hit 30-plus home runs. So if you're somebody who believes he can do that, then that price outside the top 150 is pretty great. He's going to tank your batting average most likely, but even though shortstop has got a lot better than it used to be, you're still not getting a bunch of guys hitting 30 home runs there. The problem this year was that he was just in the mid-20s, which actually a bunch of guys did, and that's not really special at the position anymore. So I think if you buy into Story's power and think that he can maybe make a couple of gains in that strikeout rate, even if it's not, you know, down to a league average or anything like that, but just to get it down to under 30% would be great for him. Then I think that kind of price is going to be a pretty nice bargain. But there's definitely a huge amount of risk here, and he could easily just go out and hit 220 next year with another 20 to 25 homers, and that's not really going to be worth anything the way that the league power is trending these days.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Trevor Story?
I think you have to try and guess what the 167 batting average in April really means, since he doesn't have you know, a major league history of batting poorly in April. I think maybe he was trying too hard in April. But like I said, I think you pretty much have to guess, because after that he was pretty much what we thought he was going to be. Oddly enough, he managed to hit 6 home runs during April while batting .167. Point being is that, you know, he had 3 months where he had more than 5 home runs. I think the 7 stolen bases was, you know, relatively encouraging. I mean, there's some value in that. I think if you could get him to hit above 240 for a season, which seems possible at one level because he's only 24 years old, and seems unlikely at another level because he's coming off a 332 BABIP and hitting just 239 this past season. But if you could get some relative consistency from him being in Colorado, I do think that there's a chance to get good late round value out of drafting Trevor Story. And I've been banging the drum all season. Before the season even started, my fearless prediction was about how shortstops and middle infielders were going to be completely unpredictable. And I think this is the kind of guy who there is enough upside in that if you get him at the right price, you could wait on middle infield this coming draft season and really get some huge gains over your fellow owners by drafting your other positions first. Because I don't know what to expect from a lot of these guys, and this is a guy who is the poster boy for that. I do think he does have a 35 home run season in him at some point. And if you get that season at, you know, outside of the top 200, you could possibly get him outside of the top 250, which I'm sure you have the ADP information for us, Justin. But I think there's significant value in certain draft situations with Trevor Story.
Trevor Story in the mock drafts went 150, his average draft position 151st. The lowest he went in a draft was 160th. The highest he went in one of the drafts was 142. So you're talking about, you know, the 10th round in your standard 15-team league. I think that's a pretty decent value for a guy who was a top 3 or 4 round pick. Now, I thought he was overdrafted in those top 3 or 4 rounds earlier this year. But to Chuck's point, since from May 24th on, so he returned from the DL, a DL stand on May 24th, he had 427 plate appearances. He hit 255, 314, 474 with 18 home runs and 6 stolen bases. Now, that is, it's not like out of this world, and it's not necessarily what even he did in 2016, but I think that's a better baseline for what kind of player Trevor Story is. I think on top of the fact that the Rockies started out with long stretches on the road in April, I think he was also dealing with some injury issues. And then, he, like Chuck said, he may have been in his head a little bit. Young player. Now, he did still strike out at a 33.5% clip during that time, but that's kind of who he is. I mean, he's Keon Broxton at shortstop with a little bit less speed. He's going to strike. He's always going to strike out a lot, but if he can make enough contact to keep the average up, I think he can be a usable player, especially with power and speed at the shortstop position. I'm going to be a buyer at pick 150 next year. Let's move on to talk about his teammate real quick, Greg Holland. Holland had a breakout year coming back from injury, Tommy John surgery, and really just lit the world on fire. Fell apart a little bit at the end and obviously did not fare well in their wild card game. But Chuck, where would you take Greg Holland next year?
As a generality, I spend the least amount of time of any expert or maybe any fantasy baseball player in or out of the industry studying closers. I just think that relief pitching is incredibly unpredictable. And it's the one area that you sort of you have to decide if you're going to pay way up for an elite player or you're going to take a gamble like 80% of the people have to. And that's where that's the classification that I put Greg Holland in. I mean, you're talking about a guy who didn't even pitch in 2016 at the major league level. You're talking about, the 3.61 ERA is decent because it happened in Colorado, and his FIP is relatively in line with it. I do think, 4 walks per 9 is more than you'd want your relief pitcher, ideally your ace closer to have. And I think his numbers are just going to be a little overblown because the Rockies kind of had a dream season here, got as much out of their pitching as they possibly could. I think it's unlikely that his setting is as good as it was this past year, next year. So he's in that group of guys that I'm not – there's 20 middle of the road mid relievers that I wouldn't mind having and taking a chance on and seeing how it works out, and that's where Greg Holland is for me. But I don't really value him over any of the other 20 guys.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Greg Holland?
He definitely impressed me the way he came back. I certainly had written him off pretty much from all of my teams as a guy coming off Tommy John surgery, going to Coors Field seemed like a recipe for disaster. And he did run into some disaster, especially in August. But overall, the line looks fine. I do wonder with the name and the fact that he got 40 plus saves that he's just going to be kind of towards the upper end of his tier. And I kind of just want to get the guy who's got the job and goes a bit later. So I'm not particularly excited about drafting him next year. He's going to be 32. He has had a few blips, especially with the control. And I don't think he's the guy he used to be. And I think if anybody is paying for him like he was, then you can just sit back and let them take him. But as a guy who's got a pretty safe role, I think the course field thing does hurt a little bit, but he's fine. He's got some good strikeout stuff. And yeah, I think he's a mid-range closer. And if he falls to the back end of that range, then I'll be perfectly happy taking him.
Yeah, I'm okay with taking him. His option for 2018 did vest, because he closed out so many games. He's going to be back in Colorado. He's more than likely going to have the job there. I was a little bit worried about the way he kind of finished out the season. He definitely had a lot more struggles in August and September than he did earlier in the season, when he was so dominant earlier in the season. I think I'll probably end up chalking most of that up to the fact that he hadn't pitched in over a year. And maybe he just got a little bit tired. I mean, he is 31, almost 32 years old. Hadn't pitched in 2 years because of the Tommy John surgery. But, I mean, you look at the velocity that he was throwing out, the movement that his pitches had. He looked like vintage Greg Holland. And, I mean, Greg Holland, for those who haven't been playing for fantasy baseball for very long, was the best closer in the game for two or three straight years with the Royals. So I think it's I'm not going to say he's going to get back to that necessarily, but I think he is a guy that maybe gets discounted because he kind of finished the year off a little bit slowly. The ERA doesn't pop out at you is something that an elite closer would have, but I think he's going to be near the top tier of kind of my second, third options at closer. Let's move on and talk about another guy who had a big postseason following a pretty disappointing regular season. AJ Pollock was drafted very, very highly, I believe in the top 40, top 50 picks, according to NFBC this last year, but really underperformed, dealt with injuries, and wasn't very good when he was on the field. But then he has some huge moments in the postseason. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on AJ Pollock?
There are aspects of Pollock's profile I like. I think his plate discipline is pretty good. He doesn't strike out much at all, which is a rare thing in the major leagues these days. But I think the power is somewhat lacking. I don't think you're going to get the power that he showed briefly a few years ago. And I think the fact that he's 30 next year is a little bit of a concern for me as well, because the speed is kind of what you're really paying for, and that declined a little bit last year. He still stole 20 bases, but he was nearly at 40 a couple of years ago. I don't think that's coming back, and I think there's just a risk that he's kind of a little bit mediocre in everything, and I think he's very valuable for the Diamondbacks, so he's going to play as long as he doesn't get hurt, which is another issue. And maybe this down season makes him a little bit of a value, but I think there's a chance that he's kind of in the teens in home runs and steals, and he's not like an elite on base guy, so I don't think he's going to score you a million runs, and I don't think he's going to drive in a lot because he's going to be at the top of the Diamondbacks lineup. So I think there's potential for him to kind of repeat this year and just be fairly middling and stuff, and he kind of finished the year hot and salvaged a few things, but overall, I'm not that excited about him. And I think as a 30-year-old on a team that I still don't really think is going to replicate 2017, I'm not going to be looking to pick him up unless we get a pretty significant discount over last year.
Well, and here's the thing. You're not going to get a significant discount if my ADPs are telling us anything. He's going as the 65th, almost 66th overall player off the board.
Yeah, so almost no discount at all.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting maybe a round or two discount at the most. So I'm completely out on AJ Pollock. The injury history now is extremely scary. He does not have the same power profile that he did before the injuries. I'm completely out on AJ Pollock, especially if it goes up any more than it did after, or considering the kind of brilliant moments he had in the postseason. Chuck, where are you at on AJ Pollock?
I'm sign me up. I'm ready. I think he has battled injuries for a couple years. I think that if you can get significant bashers with your first couple of picks and you feel like you're okay on power, I think you're going to have to build an outfield and build an outfield that you think has some speed. You know, Darius is rightfully saying that the realm of outcomes certainly exists, that he could be a guy who steals, you know, 15 to 19 bases. I'm saying that he only played 112 games, battled injuries again a little this year, but came on strong. I think he's in one of the best offensive parks, on one of the best offenses in the National League. I think he can steal 30-plus bases next year. I think, you know, even on the pace that he was on this year, you're going to get upwards of, you know, 15 to 17 home runs. I think the runs scored could go through the roof. I like all the offense around him. He's shown the capability of breaking out in the past. He goes right after the group of outfielders that I trust. And at the start of the group of outfielders where you're going to have to play a little Russian roulette, maybe with more than one bullet in the chambers. And this is the kind of, I think the speed protects his downside. And I'm playing more off of that than I think you guys are. And I also think you guys hate all the NL West teams that don't wear orange and brown. That's what I'm starting to think.
That's it. We've been back.
I have a question for you, Chuck, because I don't get how you can love a guy like AJ Pollock, but hate a guy like Greg Bird because of injury.
Well, I think we're at the two ends of the spectrum. I mean, AJ Pollock definitely went way too early last year. Okay.
But he's not getting a discount this year.
Oh, well, I still think he's, and I could be wrong, but I think you're still talking about 20 picks later than last year. And I think in some drafts, I think you're going to, the range of where he gets picked, he could get picked as low as like the 80th or 85th pick.
Lowest he went was 76th.
Okay. Well, I think you're drafting Greg Bird. I think my perception is that people are going to draft Greg Bird as a top 15 first baseman next year. Because he's a Yankee and because, you know, he's had all this talent because of the spring training. And within the realm of first baseman, I don't think that's a very good bargain at all. And I think, like I mentioned in my description, that AJ Pollock goes at the start of the questionable outfielders. And I know one thing for sure, I don't draft speed in the first few rounds. So if I could get a guy like AJ Pollock in the fourth round, that's not going to kill me in power, but could carry me in speed, could get back to 35 stolen bases or so, which is huge in this marketplace, that I like him quite a bit.
All right, I'm gonna give you some guys, some would-you-rathers on A.J. Pollock. So these are all guys that have going around him according to the ADP of the mock drafts that I did. So would you rather have A.J. Pollock or Byron Buxton?
I think I made my opinion very clear. I can't fathom someone taking Buxton over Pollock, and I know that Justin likes Buxton over Pollock.
I do. Darius?
Yeah, I mean, I could see a similar outcome. I do agree with Chuck's point that Pollock's floor is fairly safe. I mean, we've seen Billy Hamilton be a terrible Major League Baseball player and still have incredibly safe value because of the speed, and I think Pollock does.
But doesn't Buxton have that exact same floor, but
yeah, I think
a
so,
better
but I
track record of health?
I think there's potential for dropping the floor, the bottom out on the batting average and on base is much more extreme than Pollock based on what we've seen from him.
But because his defense is so good, he's still going to get on the field.
Yeah, I don't think they'll bench him. I just think that he could easily hit 200 for your team, and I don't think Pollock's going to do that.
I think there's just as good of an opportunity that Pollock doesn't get to 200 plate appearances that Byron Buxton hits 200.
There's no question that Pollock's injury history is the main blemish. But, I mean, we're rightfully, to a certain extent, complaining that Pollock's hitting profile means he should hit better than 266, which is what he's coming off of, with a 291 BABIP, which is about the bottom end BABIP for a guy who runs like Pollock, okay? And just think about what the bottom end of Byron Buxton's batting average, you know, sort of thing is. I mean, if Byron Buxton hit 195 for the first 2 months next year, I don't think anyone would be surprised.
But the argument is, or at least my argument is, that no one would be surprised if you didn't see AJ Pollock for the first 2 months of next season. So
well,
I mean,
agree.
I don't understand. Like, if Buxton hits his ceiling, I think Buxton has a higher ceiling than Pollock, and his floor is safer because he'll actually be on the field.
See, I still consider 2015 within the, you know, once a player has shown a talent, he owns it, and he's only 30 and an athletic body type. So I still consider 2015 to be within the realm. You know, and I'm not saying Buxton couldn't do that, because I guess that's, I consider that relatively in the realm, but I think the floor is so much safer with Pollock, and he's getting taken at a point where you have to try and get some floor, in the outfield, because you're going to have to take three or four more outfielders that you're going to be wincing in pain. Your gut's going to be churning at the end of the draft when you have to take outfielders. I strongly believe that this year. And, I don't doubt Buxton's upside for a second, but I do question the fact that he's gone through these incredible down cycles, so far. And I don't want to live through another one of those.
I don't know if either of you guys are looking at Byron Buxton's page, but can either of you guess what his average was for this season?
I am looking at his page, so I will not guess.
Okay.
I am not, but my guess is that his average for the season was 228, 230.
253.
Okay, well, I mean, that is true, but, you know,
his average... Stole 29 bases and 16 home runs and 511 plate appearances.
But if you're out of it by June, the fact that he hits 315 afterwards doesn't really necessarily matter.
All right.
I'm going to say I'm taking Buxton because I think his speed is so good that even if he does have 20, 30 points lost on batting average to Pollock, he's still going to be valuable enough. But I would just say get some batting average protection because he does still strike out a lot.
Sure. I just want to say that I trust the middle of the Arizona offense way more than I trust the middle of the Twins offense.
JD Martinez isn't going to be on that team next year.
I realize that, but Paul Goldschmidt is still going to be on.
That's true.
And the worst seasons that they could have possibly gotten out of Peralta and out of their big fat Cuban guy that plays in left, those seasons just happened too.
That big fat Cuban guy don't think he's going to be back next year either. all right, Pollock or Christian Yelich?
I'll take Yelich there.
Yeah, I'm taking Yelich too. It's kind of a not sexy pick right there, but there is such a safe floor that I think the easy answer is Yelich.
Yeah, Yelich is going to hit and he's going to get on base, and I think he could have, you know, a decent speed floor as well.
I guess in case it hasn't become clear to this point, I'm expecting to have to take four or five gambles in my outfield, and Pollock is one that I like. I do have a lot of respect for Yelich. I think the dynamics of the game right now undervalues Yelich wrongfully. Mm-hmm. I do think there's a ton of safety. He's just a really good sound player who's not flashy. So I see all of that. But I would rather have Pollock.
I didn't even realize Yelich stole 16 bases this year. I mean, he went 18-16 with a 282, 369, 439 slash line. That's a pretty good year.
It is, but that ballpark definitely limits his upside to me.
Last one. Andrew McCutchen or AJ Pollock?
I'll take McCutchen there. He showed me this year that he's still got the talent to be a first few round pick, so that's not too difficult for me.
I guess I have a tendency to overvalue what I think is going on in the team around him, and I don't like what the Pirates have done in recent years, and I still think there's a little bit. He's shown enough sway and enough differential between what he does from year to year that I think you're looking at a similar kind of gamble. And in that scenario, I still think Pollock has more upside.
I think there is no chance Andrew McCutchen is on the Pirates on opening day.
Yeah, well, that would make a huge difference because that ballpark's not all that friendly either.
Yeah, I mean, he's entering the last year of his deal. The Pirates are not competing. They know that. They've got Austin Meadows just wasting away in the minor leagues. I don't think there's any chance that Andrew McCutcheon, though I said this exact same thing at this time last year, so what the fuck do I know? But I don't think there's any chance.
They seem to want a king. They want a king's ransom for everybody that they want to trade.
Yeah.
You know, that appears
to be considering what Adam Eaton got, you know, and other guys who were traded this offseason, they should have gotten that.
Yeah, but Adam Eaton is how much younger? I guess I don't know that that's true. Maybe Adam Eaton isn't that much younger than McCutcheon. But McCutcheon plays like an early 30s outfielder.
McCutcheon is an early 30s out, if I haven't figured it.
See, I mean, and it's hard. Those guys are harder to package because people don't want to trade prospects. Teams that are rebuilding don't want to trade for, you know, 30-plus old outfielders.
McCutcheon is 2 years older than Adam Eaton.
Yeah, well, the Eaton thing is an outlier, isn't it?
For sure.
Nobody thinks Adam Eaton got fair trade return.
No, everybody was really upset about it.
Yeah.
All right, let's finish up with Luis Severino. Had a just awful start in the wild card game. Bounced back very, very well in the subsequent series. Is Luis Severino an ace for you next year, Chuck?
Well, I drafted him in front of the Messiah himself from the Washington Nationals, Strasburg. But I immediately regretted it, and I will not own Severino again next year. I've decided, after thinking about it long and hard, after drafting him in a mock, that I don't trust people with this type of velocity anymore. I've been bit so hard by Noah Syndergaard, bit so hard by, you know, the number one starter for the Angels, by the, you know, all these people with this extreme velocity that I don't like it anymore. And I don't know how to avoid pitchers with big velocity because you're looking for strikeout totals as well. But something about Severino, how the season ended, you know, he looked off and on towards the end of the season. And I just don't trust the super high velocity guys anymore. I would rather have somebody throwing 93 or 94 than somebody throwing 96 to 98 in this day and age. And I guess maybe that makes me crazy, but I'm very curious as to what Darius thinks.
Darius, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't think Strasburg's average fastball velocity is that far behind Severino, or are you saying that you wouldn't take Strasburg as well?
Well, Strasburg has the injury history already that I fear is in front of Severino, which is, I think, why I landed on Severino. I kind of tried to make some points while I was making picks in the mock draft, and maybe because I haven't done a lot of industry mock drafts, maybe that's why, you know, like I said, I took Charlie Blackman at 3 over, you know, over Bryce Harper, you know, who's a guy who we're scheduled to talk about relatively soon on this podcast. But it's just the concept that you don't know what to do at the end of the ace level anymore. And Severino is young, so there is that. And if he holds up, you're going to get a great value in return. I understand that, but I'm really scared off of that right now. I probably would wait on pitcher before taking an ultra high velocity guy now.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I totally get all of that, and I understand why you're worried about it. But at the same time, this is a 23-year-old who absolutely looks like an ace to me. The stuff is electric. His strikeout total was amazing. He almost pitched 200 innings in his age 23 season. You can look at that both ways, but I think the potential for a guy who's going to make 30 starts with this kind of strikeout stuff is too good for me to pass up. So obviously I'll see what the price is, but assuming he's never going to break into that kind of top 5-6 band of starters, then I think I'll probably be looking to pick Severino up in a few leagues next year, because I think this is absolutely legit. And as much as you can worry about pitcher injuries, then I think at some point you've just got to bite the bullet and take some of these guys. And I'd rather take a guy like Severino, who's got the immense upside to even be the number one starting pitcher, I think.
Yeah, I'm with Darius 100%. I mean, pitcher injuries can happen to any pitcher. It doesn't matter, like, if they're throwing massive velocities or not. I understand where you're coming from, Chuck, that, you know, you're worried about these guys holding up if they're throwing 97, 98, 99, 100. But I mean, you see guys who aren't throwing, they're throwing average fastballs or below average fastball velocities getting injured too. So I think it's just a matter of pitching is not a natural motion. Eventually, unless you're superhuman, you will break down at some point. It's just the way it is. And a lot of these guys are not superhuman. And so I'm not going to worry about the injury. Unless the guys had injury histories like Syndergaard, like Strasburg, I'm not going to worry about that so much. I'm gonna take the guy who is 23 years old and just put up a sub-3 ERA season, pitched over 200 innings this year if you include the postseason, is on an up-and-coming offense with a fantastic bullpen behind him, so he's not going to lose out on wins there. I think there's so much to love about Severino. To me, he belongs in that second tier of pitchers behind the top four aces.
Well, remember, Justin, you were in the draft room when I took Syndergaard last year, mm-hmm. and so I'm openly admitting that I may have some form of post-traumatic stress.
I understand that, but you also have to remember, I think we're all forgetting that Syndergaard had these injury issues coming into this last year. He was dealing with problems at the end of 2015, and we as an industry just ignored it because he's so fun to watch, because he's so impressive when he's on and when he's healthy. We didn't bake in any sort of injury risk for him when there should have been baked in injury risk. Severino's never had any injury issues. So
I think
there's no reason to believe that he will.
That's very true, but I distinctly remember seeing a list of the top six or seven guys with velocity 2 years ago, and one by one, each one of those players has gone down. I mean, none
Severino
of them
hasn't.
Yeah, but that, like I said, that was a couple years ago, so Severino wasn't really on the radar yet, because he had that weird start to his career.
Chris Sale's been fine. And people thought he was going to break down for years.
Yeah, that is very true. He got out of this gestation period that we're in, though, where these younger pitchers, the Matt Harveys, the Syndergaard, I can't remember the ace for the Angels, but I think Justin
Garrett
remembers.
Richards, yeah.
Garrett Richards.
My boy.
I mean, these guys with the premium velocity, I think there is a massive increase. If I had to take Luis Severino or this guy's a Met or the Mets ace, I would rather take DeGrom because DeGrom doesn't throw as hard.
Even with DeGrom's that's the insane part to me. DeGrom has a huge injury history. If anybody's going to break down between the two, it's the guy that spent time on the DL in 2017.
I think not only the kind of, you're also looking at the kind of injuries that these premium velocity guys seem to sustain, the more major types of injuries. You have an ace who goes on the DL for a while, like DeGrom did this last year, and comes back like an ace a little while later. That's one thing. You draft a guy in the first three rounds and you lose him for the entire season within a month of the season, and you feel differently about it. I mean, that's team altering. It's very hard to come back from that style of an injury to a premium pick, somebody you had to take in the first, three rounds or early in the fourth round, like you'll have to with Severino. So I completely understand where you guys come from. I don't blame you for thinking that. If Severino is healthy next year, he is a beast. I have him in one league at a ridiculous keeper price, so I'm going to own Severino next year. But I won't draft him anywhere else.
All right. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. Chuck, why don't you tell people what you're working on, where you can be reached?
I'm trying to get back in the cycle of putting out articles on the website for you guys. And I have a target for next week for that. I've had some calamities in the IT world lately, so I've been doing computer stuff to get ready to be back on full strength, which will happen next week. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter, and thanks to everyone for coming back to listening to us after our slight break. I don't think breaks are going to be the norm for us. I think we like to put out content too much, so thanks to everyone for that.
Darius, where can we reach? What are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I have been pretty slammed at work lately, so I haven't got up that much stuff lately. But I have got a couple of things that I will be getting on FWFB soon. I've got to do my all-star team. I did the all-bust team a few weeks ago, so do go and check that out. And I also need to do my prediction review, which I actually think went pretty well, but I haven't gone through and checked them all yet. So watch out for those. You can also find me over at Banished to the Pen. We've got a lot of fun stuff over there at the moment, including a guy from MIT doing stuff about the physics of baseball and meteorology and predictions. And he's fascinating, really smart guy. So I definitely recommend people check that out. And you can also find me at Batflips and Nerds, podcasting most weeks from the other side of the pond about the silly things that we think about in Britain. So, check out all of those.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read everything I write for baseball either on Friends with Fantasy Benefits or on Fangraphs, where I just dropped the complete ADP of the two early mock drafts that I was running. So definitely go over and check that out and join the discussion of people bashing all of us in the industry that participated in those mock drafts. Then you can read my football stuff over at Fantasy Alarms or on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Fantasy Alarm, I do a really, really long, really in-depth weekly preview for each fantasy season or each fantasy week, covering every single fantasy relevant player that's playing that week. So it's a 10 to 13,000 words that I put together each week. And then you can hear me on the radio, on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific, for the Tout Wars Hour with Laura Michaels. Going to have Doug Thorburn on as a guest this week, so definitely come over and check that out. If you can't listen live, you can always just download. They have a free app. Or you can catch that show on iTunes as well. Continue listening to us all off season long because we're going to continue to record. And then we do it really, really big. If you joined us mid season or after the kind of preseason this last year, you didn't see how amazingly huge we do things for kind of your prep work. We do daily podcasts for virtually every day up until the start of the season. We do 30 team previews, 30 prospect preview podcasts that Matt and I do. We're talking about putting together a draft guide that you could, you will either get for free or potentially purchase. So there's a lot of great things coming up for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. So stay tuned and continue to listen, and we will give you all the information out here or on our social media channels. That is going to wrap us up. For Darius, Chuck, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.